can't sort of make these cosmetic changes around the edges of what is fundamentally an age verification scheme.
But you feel like an ant in a room full of giants.
I could think of no better partnership with the tribe and the compact dollars.
From the fourth floor of the Capitol Rotunda, you're listening to WFSU Public Media's Capitol Report, the podcast. I'm Tom Flanagan.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org.
Among today's Capitol action, a proposed ban on social media for children under 14 in Florida would require platforms to verify the age of anyone who sets up an account. As WUSF's Valerie Crowder reports, opponents say lawmakers' efforts to make that screening process anonymous aren't enough to make it constitutional.
Legislators updated the bill in an attempt to protect people's identities during the age verification process after Governor Ron DeSantis expressed privacy concerns for users. Aaron Mackey is an attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a nonprofit that aims to protect digital speech.
You can't sort of make these cosmetic changes around the edges of what is fundamentally an age verification scheme that is completely at odds with the First Amendment.
Mackey says the requirement could have a chilling effect on people's online speech. Under the bill, companies wouldn't be able to retain or share personal identifying information, and they would only be allowed to use it to prove someone's age. Carl Szabo is an attorney with NetChoice, a tech association that represents Meta and TikTok.
It doesn't matter what the company is or is not allowed to do. The simple act of mandating something like having biometric information or a bank account to engage in speech or to access content is in and of itself a First Amendment violation.
It's unclear exactly what personal identifying information would be collected if the bill is enacted. DeSantis previously vetoed a proposed ban on social media accounts for children under 16, but he has signaled support for lowering the age to 14. I'm Valerie Crowder in Tallahassee.
Cities and counties in Florida would not be allowed to let unhoused people sleep on public property, but those municipalities could set up designated public areas for camping. Many are calling the bill cruel and unworkable as it makes its way to Governor Ron DeSantis' desk. Lynn Hatter has more.
It's heartbreaking because you're here to do a mighty work, but you feel like an ant in a room full of giants.
Jonna Coleman is the director of the Big Bend Continuum of Care, the area's agency that helps unhoused people. WFSU interviewed her a day after the legislature approved its unhoused camping bill, and Coleman is feeling devastated.
And, you know, there's thousands of ants, but like one giant smashes, you know, lots of ants at one time. That's how this feels.
She is not alone. In the run-up to the measure's passage, some lawmakers tried in vain to stop it. Broward County Democratic Senator Rosalind Osgood told colleagues that she's been homeless before, both in and out of addiction recovery. And she argues the bill overlooks several critical issues.
If we're going to eliminate homelessness, we need to be intentional about addressing the needs of every single homeless person across the entire state.
Osgood's plea to her fellow senators did not go far in heading off the inevitable passage of a proposal that she and others say doesn't get at many of the causes of homelessness, like addiction, mental illness, and the rising costs of housing.
Our focus of the bill is not about public property. It's about not wanting to see the failure in our society that has brought about homelessness.
That's Orlando Democratic Senator Geraldine Thompson. She says the measure has the effect of pushing people out. Under the bill, cities and counties cannot allow people to sleep in areas like sidewalks and public libraries.
As long as we don't have to see these people, we don't have to deal with it. It's kind of like out of sight, out of mind.
The measure would allow municipalities to designate public camping sites that have access to sanitation, security, and mental health services, though some smaller rural counties would not have to provide even that. The measure is backed by Republican Representative Sam Garrison and Republican Senator Jonathan Martin of Fort Myers. And ahead of the bill's passage, Senate President Kathleen Passidomo defended it.
It breaks my heart to see people that have to live like that. We've got to do something to help them. And I think, and I applaud Representative Garrison, and his heart is really in the right place. And I think, you can disagree on the language of the bill, but we're going to get that across the finish line, and we're going to help these people.
The bill is an outgrowth of ongoing concerns around the heightened visibility of unhoused people. Governor Ron DeSantis has been openly critical of cities like San Francisco with large populations of people living in homelessness, and he's repeatedly said that he doesn't want Florida to become that.
It's our responsibility to deal with homelessness, and that's why we can't wait any longer to bring this solution.
That's Martin. The proposal does not come with any additional money for these camps, but Martin says there's already dollars flowing to cities and counties to address the issues. The Big Bend's Jonna Coleman says that's an oversimplification and misses critical points. Money alone won't help, she says, if the state never addresses the myriad of regulations that govern how it can be spent.
You have strings attached when you receive any federal dollars, any local dollars, any state dollars. So there are things that we can and can do, and there are things that we can't do. And again, it all boils down to, even if we had enough money to house everyone, we don't have the units to put them in.
For now, Coleman says she'll just have to figure out how to protect people who are unhoused from being bounced from place to place. I'm Len Hatter.
The State Department of Education could soon be responsible for preparing academic standards about the history of communism to be taught in grades as low as kindergarten under a bill that received final approval today in the Florida House. The House voted 106-7 to pass the measure, with all of the dissenting votes coming from Democrats. The Senate last week voted to pass the bill, meaning its position to go to Governor Ron DeSantis. The curriculum would have to include information about the history of communism in the United States and domestic communist movements, including their histories and tactics. State Representative Vicky Lopez supports the bill.
Across the state, Floridians need to know factually what are these forms of government and how do they impact people. And I don't think that it's a function of trying to tell people what their opinion should be about it, but truly teaching what it is.
Democratic opponents, including Representative Ashley Gant, have raised questions about what the history of communism curriculum ultimately would include.
I still have my concerns about what is included and what isn't. The full spectrum of the amount of information our children will receive.
Public school students currently can get lessons about communism in high school social studies courses and in a seventh grade civics and government class. A U.S. government class that is a requirement for graduation also includes 45 minutes of instruction on Victims of Communism Day. Under the bill, the curriculum would begin in the 2026-2027 school year and would have to be age-appropriate and developmentally appropriate for all grade levels. The state of Florida is putting its money on the environment. Each year, millions of dollars from the state's gambling deal with the Seminole Indian Tribe will go to projects that help protect and preserve wildlife, waterways, and green spaces. Regan McCarthy reports that's under a bill now on its way to the governor's desk.
In total, the bill, a priority of Senate President Kathleen Passidomo, earmarks at least $450 million annually for environmental projects. Palm Coast Republican Senator Travis Hudson is carrying the measure in his chamber. He says it uses money from the compact, a revenue-sharing deal the state struck with the Seminole Indian tribe, in exchange for granting them exclusive rights for certain types of gambling.
I could think of no better partnership with the tribe and the compact dollars than to help take that money and keep Florida beautiful, keep our conservation land well-managed, and also clean up our waterways. I think it's a perfect thing that we can do in coordination with them.
The bill sets aside funds specifically for projects aimed at addressing the state's ongoing water quality issues. That includes $75 million for water resource projects and $5 million for a study by the Water School at Florida Gulf Coast University that will help to identify the most impactful potential regional projects. Boynton Beach Democratic Senator Lori Berman says the bill and long-term funding will help take water quality projects from piecemeal to a strategic plan.
I love the idea that we're going to have a five-year water plan. It's well past time. We do it for the Department of Transportation, and it works. They plan ahead. They figure out what projects they need. They have to prioritize. So this is a really good first step for the state of Florida.
Other allocations include $100 million for land acquisition, $150 million for flood control, and $96 million for land management. Hudson says funding will be allocated annually through the life of the compact, which is expected to last 30 years. But the gambling deal is currently facing a pair of legal challenges in state and federal court. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Gina Jordan, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Valerie Crowder. Shows are available Monday through Thursday by 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time wherever you get your podcasts. On many of these Florida public radio stations, you can tune in each Friday to catch the latest on all things happening at the Capitol. That show's also available in podcast form. Technical assistance comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report, the podcast from WFSU Public Media.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.